for us. Not little, it was big. And we're coming back around now. We're going to finish this thing up. Now what? We've been inviting people to ask the question, if I just, for the first time, if afresh, I just heard the story of Jesus, the life and the death and the resurrection of Jesus, and I believed it, what would I do now? And so we've covered a few things. First, we said, you know, if you really believed that, you would give over all of yourself. You would give over all that you have to offer as a person. You wouldn't give a part, you'd give a whole. You wouldn't treat Jesus as though he were just a religion like many of us think about religion and just give a portion and then keep the rest of ourselves for ourselves. You'd give the whole thing. And we've also talked, Pastor Mike talked about how you would take stock of everything that God had given you so that you could put it into whatever it is that God really, really cares about, the people and the ministry and the helps and the service and the prayer and all that stuff. You'd take stock of what he had given you specifically and so that you could put it to work, because you wouldn't see yourself as just yours anymore. And the last time I talked, we talked about something called judgment. And we said that it is not our job to judge, not our job to judge. And what I meant by that is not that we can't say, well, this is good or this is bad or this is right or this is wrong. We can say those things, and we probably should. We should look at those things. But it's not our job to look at something that someone else is doing to say, because of what I see, you are either good enough or not good enough in God's eyes. You're either good enough or not good enough. You deserve punishment or you don't. That's not our job to say, because it's not personal to us. And so we are moving on today with one last thing. And I want to give you something today to keep things fresh. Okay? To keep things fresh. I don't want you guys to get all revved up for a month or two and then kind of gently coast down around until next Easter time, and then you get a little pumped up. Oh, yeah, I'm a Christian. I got to be really committed. I got to be really serious. See, you don't want that. You don't want that. You want to keep things fresh, and I want to give you something to do that. I think you need that. When I first started with Jesus myself, things took off with a bang. They really did. I didn't get perfect. I didn't get flawless right away or ever, okay? But things started changing, and they were changing rapidly, okay? They were changing, mile a minute kind of a thing. I would realize something about my life, and I'd say, oh my gosh, I've been doing this whole time, and I thought it was right this whole time, and it turns out it was wrong. And you keep getting confronted with these little things as you read the teachings of Jesus and as you talk to other believers and you get convicted by His Spirit. You start to realize some things, and you start making changes, and maybe not as fast as you want, but they're coming, and you're changing, and here's the thing, a lot of the people you know aren't. So that keeps things interesting. That keeps things really interesting. And I had this conviction, you know, God is actually going to do something with me. He's got something special for just made for me to do. So I'm going to do that thing. And so I started doing all kinds of crazy things. You know, I one day I was in a store, and I looked at a guitar. I never played a guitar in my life. I said, I'm going to buy that guitar. And I'm going to learn to play that guitar, 12-string guitar, dumbest thing in the world, try to learn how to play the guitar on 12-string guitar. I didn't care. I'll do it. And I'll start trying to write some songs and stuff. Now, listen, I'm not really still doing that, so maybe I didn't have the right idea, but I was trying stuff. Okay, I was trying stuff. And I would sing in front of people. Oh, my gosh, why did I ever do that? But I was trying stuff. It kept things interesting. But here's something that can happen over time. Things start to cool off a little bit, don't they? They could start to kind of cool off a little bit. See, as you make better decisions, relationship decisions, you know, you have a little less drama in your life, and you start doing things wiser, and you start, you know, paying attention to what Jesus says about all kinds of things in your life, and there's a little less tension and a little less tension where there used to be maybe a whole lot of tension. And you develop some disciplines in your life. You know, you start praying a lot. You start reading. You start trying to figure things out. You start getting involved in things and serving and things in church, and life becomes a little more predictable, right? Or it can. But here's the problem. Sometimes we get to a place where things have kind of cooled off, and you feel like maybe something's wrong. Like maybe you're stuck. You know, maybe you feel like your faith isn't really growing like it used to, not like at first, and maybe I'm gonna, oh, this is a hard word, and this is a word that only a preacher can say. Okay, this is only I can say this. All right, You know how people can like say ethnic jokes, but it's only okay if you're that ethnicity? All right, I'm going to say the B word, boring. Your church life, your Christian life can actually get to a place where it's boring. And I almost want to puke when I say that. You know, I don't want to, I get shivers. I almost get offended saying it myself. You don't want to get to a place where your Christian life is boring. And here's the thing, you can get there. People get there all the time. They say, you know, I feel like I'm stuck. I feel like I'm spinning my wheels. I haven't really, you know, had any big revelations in a long time. Is God even talking to people anymore? Did I just imagine it at first? Maybe it's the preacher's fault. You know, maybe if he gave better sermons, maybe if my church did more of this, you know, maybe I'm just in the wrong church. Maybe, you know, and they start thinking of all the things. We start thinking of all the things that might be wrong. And listen, on the outside, if you're on the outside looking in, and you're not really, you know, you don't profess to be a Christian, it can look boring. It can look boring after a while. You know, you're polite, you're courteous and all that. You don't really want to, you know, ruffle any feathers. But you're like, you know what? I just see them. They file in and they file out. And it's, I don't know what they're doing in there. I guess it's just fire insurance. And they're just, you know, they're mostly the same. They don't really, you know, they're not getting drastically different. They're more or less the same person they've been for a while now. It can look like boring. And maybe that's one of the things that put you off in the past. Man, what's the point? They're really not that different. And they don't really seem to do a lot. You know, it's like, man, all the stuff you used to do, it was fun. You can't do that anymore. Well, what's left? But I'm so excited today because I have found the cure. I found the cure. Yeah, you're like, you're all holding your breath like, really? What is it? What is the cure? There is a cure out there that has always been there that is meant to keep your faith growing, to keep it getting bigger, exponentially stronger. It's out there, and I want to share it with you, and it's going to come today in the form of a lesson that Jesus taught, okay? And it's in Matthew 14. We're going to look at it here in just a second or two. And Matthew 14, 13, this is a famous story. If there's like a top five Jesus story, okay, this is one of them. And that could be church people, that could be with not church people, it doesn't really matter. So lots of people have heard this story, very, very well known. You may not even have read it, but you've at least heard about it. It's what I would call a fish story, okay? And there's some fish and some bread involved, and you're going to recognize it almost immediately. And where we find Jesus in all this is that something really sad and sobering has just happened for Jesus in his life. There is a guy named John the Baptist. A lot of you have heard of John the Baptist. Well, John the Baptist had this big public ministry, wildly successful as ministries go. People are flocking to him, and his main message is, you guys need to change your mind, how you think about your relationship with God, and get ready for somebody that can restore that. That was his main message. And so he preached that all over the place. You know, you need to change your mind about sin. You need to change how you think about God. You need to change your mind about everything. And so he does that, and he's very, very outspoken. And eventually, he does a little bit too much talking about right and wrong and offends the wrong person, the king. And so he gets killed. He gets killed. He doesn't like what the king has done in his marriage. He's married somebody else's wife, and it's not right, and it's not good. And so he's outspoken, and he gets killed for it. And John the Baptist was Jesus' cousin, and that's where we find Jesus when we pick up. It says in Matthew 14:13, when Jesus heard what had happened, he withdrew by boat privately to a solitary place. Hearing of this, the crowds followed him on foot from the towns. When Jesus landed and saw a large crowd, he had compassion on them and healed their sick. So he tries to just take a little me time, get away, pray, get his head straight. He's been working hard. I mean, just people filing to him in lines with all their desperate problems, you know, the paralysis, and I've been bleeding, and I got this sickness, and I know you can do something about it. And it makes you so popular when people know you can do something about problems that nobody else can do anything for. And so he's just getting away to pray and get his head straight. And he gets to where he's going, and the crowd has beat him there. It says, as evening approached, the disciples came to him and said, "This is a remote place, and it's already getting late. Send the crowds away so they can go to the villages and buy themselves some food." Now, think about this for yourself for just a second. Aren't they doing that thing that most people do when you have somebody come over by surprise, or they stay a little longer than you thought they were gonna, or there are more of them than you thought there were gonna be, and they start to stay, you know, it starts to get toward dinner time, and you're kind of thinking, when are these guys gonna leave? You know, because you don't want to end up in that embarrassing, awkward position of, well, I need to eat dinner, but I didn't really plan for dinner. You know what I mean? Like, I was thinking of doing PB&J tonight for the kids and just, you know, watching Netflix. And do you think you guys could leave? You don't want to end up there. You're not equipped. You're not ready. You were not ready. You know, they were not ready. They showed up to camp out, not cater. They had, you know, they just weren't ready for this. And this is so interesting. They've taken stock of what they have. We got to get these people out of here. We got these people out of here. And this is what Jesus said. Jesus replied, "They do not need to go away. You give them something to eat." They do not need to go away. You give them something to eat. This has got to be the most frustrating moment. I'm telling you what, people think, oh, it'd be so great to be with Jesus. Well, it would be great to be with Jesus, but don't you worry, you would be frustrated a lot of the time. So what's their next word? You know, right off the cuff. Okay, let's Jesus, okay. We have here only 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish, they answered. This is what we got, okay? Just to make sure that you're not, you know, overshooting us here. This is what we came here with enough for us to eat, like, overnight out in a field someplace. We don't have that. We're not equipped for this. There's a lesson here forming. I hope you start to pick it up. We're not equipped for this, Jesus. We do not have. We look at what we have. We do not have it. We do not have enough to complete the job. And this is what he said. He said, "Bring them here to me. Bring me what you do have. Bring it all here. Bring it all here. Quit freaking out. I didn't know. I mean, I can see the crowds. I know exactly how many people are there. And I know what you have. And I want you to bring it to me." It says then, and he directed the people to sit down on the grass, taking the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, 2 measly fish. And looking up to heaven, he gave thanks and broke the loaves. Then he gave them to the disciples, and the disciples gave them to the people. They all ate, all of them, and were satisfied. And the disciples picked up 12 basketfuls, a basketful for everybody, basketfuls of broken pieces that were left over. The number of those who ate was about 5,000 men, besides women and children. Have you ever seen 5,000 people in one place? It was just the dudes. Just the dudes. Then there are the women and the, you know, they counted by men back then. I don't know what that was about, but they did it. Okay? That's what they did. So how many people is that? You just kind of have to guess. Maybe 7,500, 8,000 people. Maybe it was 10,000 people. Maybe it was more. It's just a wild crowd that nobody could really count all, so they would just count, like, you know, every dude. And they figure, well, every dude comes with 3 people or something like that. And so, Jesus proves himself strong to them. But listen, it's hard not to get caught up in the power of the miracle, right? So many people, they point to this story and they say, wow, that's really cool that's in there. And you ask, well, what's the point of that story? I don't know. Jesus can do cool stuff. That's true. But there's a lesson. There's a lesson here, and most people just totally miss it. When those boys did the thing that all of us at some point are guilty of, they came to him and they said, look, there's this thing that needs to be done for the ministry's sake. There's this thing that ought to happen to these poor people. They need something. This person I know needs something. There's something that's got to happen here. And they take stock of themselves and they say, we don't have everything that's needed. We don't even close to have what would be needed. Not even close. It's like visually overwhelming to imagine maybe 10,000 people in total getting hungry and being sick and hurting and having traveled a long way on foot, it says, from villages. It's getting dark. They're nowhere near anything, and they're so desperate. I mean, they know they're hungry. They know. I mean, they could do the math. Hey, we're a long way away. If we keep staying here, we're eventually, you know, it's going to be dark, and then we can't. They're doing it, but they are so desperate. They are so desperate to get something from this man who can heal people that they just don't care. They're going to stay and stay no matter what it takes. If they have to sleep there overnight on a rock, they're going to do it. It's got to be so overwhelming to look out there at that crowd and go, their need is so great. And all I got is this right here. And they did what every one of us naturally does when you get into a situation like that. You say, this is a bad situation. This is not a situation I want to get into. I don't want to get into a situation like this and get embarrassed. I don't want to get into a situation like where I'm way in over my head. No, no, no. If a situation like that comes along, this is what you do. You say, you know what? Get them out of here. Get them out of here. Move them on. Shut that window. Close that door. That's not a door I'm going to walk through. And Jesus' lesson to them is this. You're right, boys. That's not a good situation. That's the perfect situation. That is the perfect situation for you. That is exactly the situation that you need. You need to get into a place where you are sure, where you are absolutely, without a doubt, convinced there is no way you alone can rise to this occasion, and then you need to commit to it. You need to walk right through the door and say, I'm going to bring all I have. I'm going to bring all I have, knowing that it will not be nearly enough. So that Jesus has an open door to walk through and prove himself strong. It's not just a bad situation. It's not a good situation. It's the perfect opportunity. And Jesus will not let it slide by. As sad as he is, as distracted as he would be tempted to be, as tired as he must be. Think about how tired a man, I mean, he's Jesus, but he's in a physical body still. He must be exhausted. Must be. Think about that. Thousands of people lined up to get something from you. Enough to keep you busy for hours and hours and hours, and then you move on the next day and they follow you because there's still more hours and hours and hours, and you got these guys you're trying to train hours and hours and hours. But in this moment, in an exhausted moment, in a sobering moment, he cannot let this opportunity pass by. Boys, if you are stepping back and you are saying, this is a situation too great for us to handle, that is perfect for you. This is how I'm going to grow your faith. See, you can't grow faith in Jesus doing what you know you can do anyway. Can't be done. You can grow your faith in yourself. You know, I mean, I've done the brakes on my car a few times. Every time I do my brakes, you know, I'm a little better at this. I have a little more confidence that I'm going to be able to pull through this thing. Great. But that's not the same as stepping into something you know you are way over in your head. Way in over your head on. Not the same. But that is the place. That is the window of opportunity Jesus wants and needs to build up faith in a person's heart. You've got to give a person an opportunity to be sure, to be absolutely convinced they're about to come to the end of themselves where they gave all that they had. They put it all together, rounded it up, and it was obvious it would not be enough. That's when Jesus wants to walk through the door and say, "Great, I will take it from here and do what you could never do on your own." And you'll have to be convinced. There will be no excuse. It'll just be obvious. It'll be obvious I had to have done it. That's where faith is built. Yeah. But here's the thing. That is so unnatural. That is so incredibly unnatural. We are taught our entire lives, don't get into a situation that you can't control. Don't get in too deep. There's this phrase out there, I don't know where I read it, in a blog post or something. It was tips for being wildly successful. Okay? There's something like that. And I mostly don't read that stuff, but occasionally it's just like, you know, tabloids. You're like, okay, what does it say? You know? And one of them was, believe in yourself. Four was believe in yourself. So, you know, you can do anything you put your mind to, right? That kind of thing. And then five was, know your limitations. What? Doesn't even make any sense. What? So be sure that you can do whatever it is you put your hand to, but be careful you don't get into something you can't do. What? That doesn't make any sense. Don't write a check you can't cash. Haven't you heard that one before? Or know where the exits are when you go into a restaurant. You know, there's all these little insurance policy philosophies that we have to be sure that you don't get into a spot that you can't entirely control. You don't want to get embarrassed. You don't want to look stupid in front of people. You don't want to feel dumb. You don't want it, right? We're taught our whole lives that way. And you know what? That philosophy makes all the sense in the world as long as you are the only person that you can rely on. Because you know how much you have and don't have for the most part. You know how much money you have. You know how much strength you have. You know how much smarts you have. You know how much experience you have in certain things. You know what your weaknesses are for the most part, at least a lot of them. That makes all the sense in the world. If you have only you to rely on. Yeah, you should think like that. If it's only you, you should think like that. You better be cautious. But when you become a believer in Jesus, this whole thing just flips everything upside down. Because there's somebody in the picture now that's smarter than you, has more ability than you, more understanding, more foreknowledge, more power, more everything. Not just that he has more, he has all of it. Right? He has all of it. I mean, even if you're not a Christian, okay, that's the idea, that Jesus had all the power, all the ability, all the authority, all the smarts, knew stuff before it would happen, knew what you were thinking as you thought it, and would correct you before you even said it out loud. I mean, it's wild, it's creepy, but it's wild. And he had it all, and now he's saying, look, you don't have to live the way that you used to live under that philosophy anymore, because I'm here. And when you step back and you say, but I don't have enough to do this. I can't go through with this thing Jesus would have me do. I'm convicted. My heart moves for this situation, and I would like to do something, but I only have this.
Look, this is what I got. This is what I got to work with.
He's saying, if you believe in me, you're wrong. You're wrong. And the next time you catch an opportunity, okay, to let yourself be put in a position where it's way too much for you, where it's way over your head, where that person needs way too much help, where the situation needs too much money or too much this or too much skills or too much talent. No, that's the perfect situation for you. You need situations like that in your life if you want to build your confidence in me, because you have to let me work. You have to give me a place to do something. You have to give me a window.
I'm a little embarrassed. I can't remember the exact reference. But there is a point in the Gospels where one of the Gospel writers, it just came to me, just remembered. One of the Gospel writers said that as Jesus came through a town, he could do no miracles there because there was so little faith. He could do no miracles. That bothered me. I'm like, wait a minute, what? Wait a minute, he just raised somebody from the dead, you know, he turns water into wine, he can make, you know, meals multiply by a bazillion times. He seems to have no problem doing anything impossible, and it says he comes through a town and he couldn't do anything. What does that even mean?
I think what it means is that nobody in that town was willing to open that door and come out there and say, look, I've come to the end of myself. I've gone to people. I've tried to find help. Nothing works. But here I am to give you an opportunity to do something. Nobody would give him that opportunity. And if nobody gives him the opportunity, he's not going to do it. You got to give him the opportunity. He wants you to give him the opportunity to show himself. That little bit of faith, that little kernel of a step, to commit to something that's bigger than you. And he'd love to walk right through that door. Love to.
I was trying to think of an analogy for how this works, you know, and I thought of some of my own stories, but you know what? I realize I've told a lot of my own stories, and I don't want to overdo the stories. You'll get sick of me after a while if I tell the wrong stories over and over. So I'll save those stories for another time. But I thought of this analogy. Everybody I've ever talked to who flies on an airplane, everybody I've ever talked to, admits to me, yeah, the first time I got on an airplane, I was a little nervous. Now, some people are really nervous. Some people are like shaking like, you know, leaves in the wind. And some people just have that, you know, that quiet strength, you know, that John Wayne getting on an airplane thing. You know, if John Wayne got on an airplane, you'd be like, well, Pilgrim, you know, it's time to take off. You know, you don't expect, but even those people that have that quiet strength, that stoicism, you know, they get on an airplane for the first time they get on, there's something going on in here. There's a little, like, ooh, you know, maybe it's such a good idea.
Why? There's a perfectly good reason every sane person gets nervous the first time and they get on an airplane. You want to know why? Because you can buy the ticket. You can handle that. You can pack your bags. You can handle that part. You can wait in line. You can handle that part, or at least most of us can. You can, you know, walk down the gangway. You can stow your carry-on in the overhead compartment. And you can sit down and buckle your seat, but there ain't nobody that can fly. And you know it, right? You cannot fly.
Ta-da, you know, pearl of wisdom today.
You can't fly. And when you get on that plane and you've brought everything with you and you've done everything that you can do to make sure this trip goes just so that you've lined things up on the other side. You got your rental car there waiting for you, or grandma or whatever. Okay, you can do all that part that's totally within your grasp, but you cannot get out and push. That part is totally up to somebody else.
And there is literally nothing you can do to keep that airplane in the air. If the pilot's not doing his job, or the mechanic didn't do his job, or the designer didn't do their job, nothing. Totally out of your hands at that point. Totally relying on somebody else. And there are things that you can do. I know that there are sufferers of flight scare or whatever they call that. You know, just you don't want to go on a plane. I get that, okay? I know there's things you could do. You know, you can. They tell you all kinds of things. You can read articles about the safety statistics and how it's, you know, safer than driving or other things that you might do. You can read that. It might help a little bit. It might help a little bit. You can talk to people that have flown a lot, and you know, they're encouraging you. You say, oh, yeah, I do it all the time. After a while, it just becomes fun. It's fun. And you're kind of like, okay, that's good for you. I hope I'm as crazy as you someday. You can do all kinds of things. You can do all kinds of things. But they will tell you, I will tell you, that really, really the only way to build enough confidence to overcome that is to check your schedule, make a commitment, buy the ticket, walk on the plane, and let it take off. And when it sets back down on the ground, lo and behold, you didn't die. Look at that. It actually got you where they said it would take you. Well, that's if you're really fortunate. Sometimes they set you down somewhere else, but the point is, it set you down. It didn't let you down, it set you down. And the next time you go to get on that plane, you know what? You have a little more confidence. You don't have quite the same shake. Maybe you have a little bit of shake still, but you don't have the same amount. It's not that bad. You're not getting ready to, you know, as the engines are spooling up. I never had that problem, but I know some people have. It's a little easier the next time. Why? Because you've seen this process prove itself out. And that is exactly what I believe Jesus is teaching his disciples. By the way, he didn't just do this thing one time, he did it another time. Just to make sure they really got the idea. This whole feeding a whole wicked crowd. Yeah, he did that twice. That's what they say, twice. And so, I just want to ask you, are you feeling a little stale in faith? Feel a little bored sometimes? I wonder, man, shouldn't I be growing a little faster? Shouldn't I be getting some more revelations? Shouldn't something be happening? You may not even be able to put your finger on it. Haven't been up to this point. But I got to ask you, are you willing to let yourself be put in a position that is definitely too big for you, and lock in? Buckle up. If you have something like that going on in your life, if you've answered some call that Jesus has put forth to you, I'm telling you what, you will be challenged. You will be shaken up at times. You will have your weaknesses showcased for everybody to see at times. But there is one thing that will not happen. You will not get bored. You will never be bored. You will not get stagnant. Your faith will not get mold on it. You will not get any mold on your faith when you are constantly living a habit, a lifestyle of jumping into situations that are really beyond you. You will have to learn to be dependent. You will have to learn to look for what Jesus is doing in a situation. There's just no way around it. You can't get stuck if you're living a life like that. Hey, you could blame it on the preacher. I'll take the blame. You know what? You could do that. Listen, you could throw stuff at me. You could throw fruit, whatever you want to do. But it's not... Yeah, you know what? I've heard a lot of boring sermons. Oh, it makes me crazy. It makes me crazy to hear a boring sermon. But at the end of the day, you have to look at your own self. Because a lot of things can be right in your Christian life, but if you're unwilling to put yourself in a position like that, it's going to be a while. You can pray. That's good. You should pray for faith. And you can talk to other people about things that they've done and things that they've experienced. And that's good for your faith too. But there has to come a point where you yourself are willing to answer that call. Say, you know what? This is all I got. And I'm aware it is not nearly enough. But I choose to walk in anyway because I'm going to give Jesus space to work. That is going to build faith. And so, I'm going to finish things up today. First by asking a question, and then turning it over to somebody else. My question for you, whether you've been a Christian a long time, a short time, or maybe never a time, or maybe used to be, this is my question to you. When's the last time you let Jesus take you way in over your head? You got a person that you've cared about a long time and you know they need something, you need some help, or there's a ministry you know needs help or needs to be done and it hasn't been done, nobody's doing it. Is there a family you want to take care of? Is there somebody that just needs to hear something? It needs to hear your voice on the telephone for the first time in a long time? Is there a spouse you care about so much, but they can't relate with you right now? What is the situation that you have that is too big? What is the situation that you have that is too big? When's the last time you opened yourself up to it and said, you know what, I'll just walk in with what little I have? If you have a situation like that in your mind right now, I want you to lock onto that. We're going to take communion in a few minutes, but I want you to lock onto that situation. Because I think what Jesus is saying is, I know you don't have enough. I know you don't have enough. That's the point. And if you've been walking by or closing the door or shutting the window, hear Jesus right now. Hear him saying, oh, no, you don't. Oh, no, you don't. Son, daughter, oh, this is just the kind of thing I love. So I'm going to invite